Welcome to The Professional Next Door. I'm your host, Jerry R. Period Smith. This program talks to professionals throughout the community. We will get a chance to peek into their lives and learn the secrets of being a professional, almost like having a conversation with your neighbor. Okay, you guys, this is another Tuesday night, and I want to welcome you to The Professional Next Door. I'm your host, Jerry R. Period Smith. And in this chair over there, I have the distinct pleasure of letting him briefly introduce himself, but you're going to be impressed. You got to hear this whole show. Mr. Peter, appreciate you coming by, man. Tell the few people that don't know who you are just a little bit about yourself, because we're going to go deeper in a minute.
Oh, thank you. Well, my name, I am Peter Anthony Andrews, born and raised in South Jamaica, Queens.
Ah, okay.
Two blocks from the 40 Projects, where I spent most of my youth. Okay. I was fortunate enough to be an all-city basketball player at Jamaica High School and went on to play a year up at Phillips Exeter Academy. And I was then invited to play at the University of Pennsylvania by Jack McCloskey, the late, great Jack McCloskey, Dick Harder, and Digger Phelps.
Okay.
And I was captain, most valuable player at the University of Pennsylvania. And then I graduated with a degree from the Wharton School in International.
Okay, so we're going to expound on a lot of those. So let's do this. I like to to me, it adds dimension to the guest when I ask them about their hobbies, of saying some things that you like to do, you have done, and I got to remind you, it's a family show, even though it's Vegas.
Well, I have family hobbies. My mom had a restaurant in Jamaica, Queens, near what was then the Jamaica Racetrack. It's now Aqueduct. Yeah. But anyway, so we grew up in a restaurant family. There were six of us.
So what about hobbies, though? Your personal
cooking,
hobbies? Cooking.
My personal
cooking?
My daughter insists that I try to get on Chopped if I can. Anyway,
wait a minute, you're that good that you're going to invite me over, man, for dinner sometime.
I have
me and the wife, you know.
I have some dishes that I guess people say are pretty good, yeah. Uh-huh. So I enjoy cooking. I have three different sizes of black old-fashioned iron skillets.
Okay,
quite a bit.
Okay.
I have adequate pots and pans. It's important to have good equipment in your kitchen and certainly sharp knives and things like that. But good cooking and serving great food has to do with the recipe, the preparation, and
I'm not trying to give a plug, but this one, they box up the food, and I went down to L.A. and visited my daughter, and she was cooking it. So I joined the company, and they send you enough food to prepare for 3 days a week, and it takes about six steps, and usually between 10 and 15 minutes to prepare, and it's like that's what I've been doing for about 3 weeks or so now. So I'm like a hack chef in the making, baby.
Well, I enjoy the actual chopping and the preparation
and all that.
And
yeah.
It's almost like, I guess, some people knit and some people have other hobbies with their hands. And so maybe that's part of it is the process of preparation. But that's just one of my hobbies.
The thing about the herbs, I mean, do you, when you're maybe inventing or creating a new dish, do you like taste it? The herbs and this could use some oregano or some stuff like that. I always wonder, say, how does a chef create a meal? How does he know what the ingredients would be that's going to make this? Oh, if I combine lemon with this garlic, then, and they've never done it before. So do you do it that way, or how do you get your?
I have a few dishes and recipes, and even when I follow other recipes, that you improvise a bit. And go with certain spices that you feel compatible.
Seeing you like you dip your pinky in it, right? And taste it and say, oh, some oregano, some nutmeg, or some thyme. Is that the process?
Yeah.
Okay, so now, where did you grow up? I know you said in Queens.
In Queens,
and
Jamaica,
what
Queens.
impact that might have had on your career choice?
Well, I think what was terrific about where I grew up, it was a lot of sports, and we were outside all the time. And so I ran track at the Police Athletic League, and we had a great community center and great men and women running the community center. So we were always in competition throughout New York City, and softball and baseball and
basketball. What era are we talking about? I'm trying to
like 1952.
Okay.
I got to high school in 1960, but throughout my formative years, I was involved in paddle tennis and basketball, baseball, track, every sport.
Man.
And I loved it. So that helped, and that helped me with, you know, I was a decent student, had good grades, so I was able to parlay that into participation in sports in high school, and that led to moving on. And then I decided I had an academic scholarship to the University of Pennsylvania. They don't give out athletic scholarships. Hmm. But anyway, I played. I wanted to play because it was a big five, Villanova, St. Joe, LaSalle, Temple. We played in the Palestra. And McCloskey was a great coach, and Dick Harder and Digger Phelps. So anyway, it was a wonderful 4 years at University of Pennsylvania.
Okay.
And then I did my graduate work. After that, I went up to Yale Drama School and worked in participated in a Master of Fine Arts program in theater management.
So when I was looking at the, as you were describing that, and say most working class neighborhoods, the structure or lack of structure of sports is not the same as some wealthier suburban areas. So the pool of players that normally enter most of the professional sports will come from an area where you had a lot of time to do that, to develop your body and your skills playing basketball or whatever it was. And it was more obviously street style than organized as a suburban, you know, rec center kind of thing. In case you're just joining me, you're listening to The Professional Next Door. I'm your host, Jerry R. Pierre Smith, 91.5 The Source. And we have Peter telling us about growing up cooking and playing sports to keep that fat off, right?
Right.
Back to that era. So you had already started into your college experience. So go back and take us there and say, if there's another kid who have ambitions of going to college and pursuing sports, what are some recommendations that you would talk to them about in balancing the two? So I have a nephew playing at Long Beach. Go Long Beach. We're going to go down there to Riverside. They got a conference down there. And he has a 4.2 GPA, but he's also the first starter and all that stuff with Long Beach. Deshaun Booker, shout out. So how did you? You said that your academics were good and sports at the same time. I always wondered how the athletes, how they, all that schedule of practicing and playing whatever sport it is. Can you remember back during that time and say how you balanced that?
Well, I came from a family where my father insisted on academic excellence. I had two older sisters who did very well and went on to college, and I had especially my sister Lily, who's just incredible, and my brother, who's passed on now, he graduated Morehouse. My sister Lily went to Queens College. My brother, younger brother Robert, went to the University of Pennsylvania. I have a sister who went to Howard University undergrad and Howard Law School.
How many did you count right then? How many did you count?
Six. three girls and three boys.
And all went into college.
Yeah, and my mom, who passed 1 year ago, she went from September 19, 1916 to January 23rd, I believe, 2017. We lost my mom a year ago.
Wow.
Anyway, but my dad died earlier, much younger. But we had a household where academics, you had to be a good student. It was just something that was part of
expected.
The household expected.
Yeah.
But also the sports we had were very organized, and the little league, they had a little league, and we had Pony League baseball. We had organized the Long Island Daily Press. Basketball league, high school in New York City, the high school championship games and all that was huge when I grew up. So, you know, it was very organized and uniformed and great referees.
Oh, yeah.
Leander Jones was from our neighborhood. Bob Beamon, who is the world champion, still Olympic gold medalist, he lives here in Las Vegas. We grew up together, and in fact, I'm doing a documentary about his life story. But he grew up in South Jamaica, Queens, with me, and went on to jump 2.5 inches in 1968. And that 50-year-old record has never been broken.
Still stands.
And, okay. And yeah, Bob. So they were. Well, we had a lot of great athletes that that came out of South Jamaica over the years in different sports, but mainly basketball.
So now, what did you major in?
In college, by as international business, my degree is in economics. I have a degree in economics and finance.
I met a client the other day. I'm a real estate agent as well, and she is in an accountant. And the stereotype or of accountants is saying that they ain't flashy, you know. and we caught to the side of the brain that you're using. There's no expression. It's like you're like lawyers, and there are certain industries where there's no expression. You're not animated, kind of thing. And then that doesn't fit, you know, when I'm seeing you. Now, did you work in accounting when you?
No, it was not accounting. It was finance.
Finance,
it was money. It was a lot to do with money. It was the Wharton School. But I had to learn how to do budgets and finance and construct deals and. Even as a producer and as a studio, I was vice president of NBC primetime programming after I worked for Harry Belafonte for 3 years in his production company in New York.
Okay.
And I had to do a lot of budgeting and forecasting and all that kind of stuff. And then NBC was very creative in programming. I was vice president of primetime dramatic programs at NBC for several years. And then I went on to Columbia Pictures as an executive vice president. And then MGM Studios. I was senior vice president of Columbia, executive vice president of MGM. So I worked in Hollywood for all those years. And now as a producer, you have to do budgets and you got to make plans about worldwide distribution. And you have to be able to answer questions to your investors. And so money and international business was what I majored in and is what I do and what I love to do. But it's all part of the creative process of running a production company.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And for whatever crazy reason is that I thought that you were sitting there, you know, counting the money that someone else was making. It seemed like you were like setting things up to kind of manage and to bring it in as well. Right?
Well, I had to count the money that I was making for Mr. Belafonte because we had a lot of product to distribute.
Yeah.
And then other than that, no. I had a budget at NBC. It was about $80 million back in those days.
How do you keep up with $80 million?
You keep up with it. You hire writers to write scripts and things. I was fortunate enough to be involved in green lighting Little House on the Prairie, Columbo, Quincy, Chips, Rockford File, Police Story. We did a miniseries called Shogun. So it was a terrific time for working with the writers, the directors, and producers, and the stars that were on the NBC schedule in those days.
So we're going to take a quick break right here. And on the other side, we're going to talk more about your role. We know what your title is, but knowing what you do, I want you to go into more details on some of those things. In case you're just joining me, you listen to The Professional Next Door. I'm your host, Jerry R. Perry Smith, 91.5 The Source. And we're going to take a quick break right here and come back. And Peter's going to go in depth. So if you want to sit in the co-producer's chair, the manager's chair, the whatever's chair, this guy said, you got a professional ambition to do that. Peter's going to tell you about it. Be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back. I'm your host, Jerry R. Period Smith, 91.5 The Source, and you are listening to The Professional Next Door. I have Peter here, and he's sharing with us that, this to me is that how many people will you get to talk to that's going to give you a little insight of what's happening behind the scenes at some of these major TV production studios? And you said that, what were some of your positions there?
Well, I was vice president of NBC primetime dramatic programming.
So let's do this. Go back to the job or a couple of jobs you had just before that. So that
we only had one job before that, and I was very fortunate to work for a very successful superstar in those days, Mr. Harry Belafonte.
Oh yeah.
Legend. And we had a production company in New York City.
Oh, okay.
And I worked as his staff writer producer in that in his company. That was my first job after after Yale Drama School, and Mr. Belafonte hired me, and I spent 3 years with him. And that set the table. We did Buck and the Preacher with Sidney Poitier.
Yeah,
we did the Harry Belafonte and Lena Horne TV special. We did several projects, and it led to me being positioned for NBC to hire me away from Belafonte.
So describe some of those things, because, I mean, we know the title, but walk through any aspect of it. When you go into work, then your secretary comes in, sit with you, or, I mean, what do you describe a day?
Well, what we do is, for example, we look for properties. That's the first thing a producer has to have, is good taste and the ability to get a novel. We get a book, a novel, or a screenplay that's been submitted to the company, read it, and decide whether or not it's commercial and would be a good vehicle for Mr. Belafonte to star in, for example.
So that involves a lot of reading.
Indeed it does, yes.
Would you have to read the entire book or the Reader's Digest version of it, or you have someone else to kind of...
Well, they have the Kirkus Report, so you go through the abbreviation and description of books that are coming out.
Okay.
Because you can't read all those
books. That's what I was thinking. That's time-consuming.
But that's part of it. But no, scripts, screenplays... They're 100, 125 pages, and you get to the point where you can do 2 hours. And you know the writers. If it comes from a reputable writer, it's usually something that is a project that you really want to consider. And also subject matter. We look for, do we want to do a detective drama? Do we want to do a historical piece? We decided we wanted to do a Western, and that's how Buck and the Preacher
came.
And then Harry Belafonte and Sidney Poitier were very good friends and had a production deal at Columbia Pictures and at United Artists. So when the script came along, it was just a terrific vehicle for the two of them. And then we developed and went on to do Uptown Saturday Night. Let's do it again.
Yeah.
There were other projects that fit those two superstar giants.
And so now, how did people submit? How does someone submit something to a house like that? Not necessarily.
Well, you can't take all that stuff. They have to sign releases. So it's a whole process that's a little difficult to go into now. But... Hmm. Yeah, you get people. They submit their agents. You work with the agencies,
that
represent writers and novelists. And then they say, "Hey, here's a project we think is good for Mr. Belafonte. And what do you like?
Oh, okay.
What do you think about that?" NBC was a little different, and so was Columbia Pictures and MGM, where we worked exclusively with agencies and also with our producers who were on the lot under contract at Columbia and MGM. They were the filters. They would submit projects and come in and present. They come in and pitch their ideas. So it's a guy, I'll give you an example. A good friend of mine, Lou Shaw, who was one of my writers on Columbo, came in and said, "Peter, I want to do a series about a coroner." And I said, "A coroner? Oh, God." He said, "Yeah, the whole theory of the show is every murdered victim points an accusing finger at his or her assailant." Anyway, ultimately, he wrote a script called Quincy. We shot it, and it went through the roof on a Sunday night, and it became an 8-year hit at NBC. So that was an example of the origin of developing a television show and greenlighting it when you're in that position.
So as I look at now to say you have a cable channel with 300 channels.
Yeah, it's
so
different.
So content of saying that, how can they feel?
It's a great question. When I worked in television, it was only ABC, CBS, and NBC.
Four channels or whatever, the major
three.
One.
And then there came a fourth. And then we even laughed. A guy came out from a company called HBO to start HBO. And we used to
laugh at it,
in
right?
the 70s saying people will never pay for television. Television's
free.
Yeah. Now television is not free, as we all know, when we get those cable bills every month. Wow. But no, that's a great – no, the content is king. And people – all these channels are very hungry, and they need constant content in order to satisfy their audiences. So that's why as a – I run a production company called Peco Global. I'm an independent producer now. But and I, as I mentioned to you earlier, I develop and deliver content to different places like – We're doing some projects that we're in discussion with Netflix. We've got some other projects. I have a movie that I did many years ago, but it was never released. It was sort of tied up for different reasons. But it's called The Importance of Being Earnest, and it's based on the Oscar Wilde play written, I think, 1895, the British classic.
Wait, let me pay a bill right quick. In case you're just joining me, you listen to The Professional Next Door. And I'm your host, J.R.R. Peary-Smith. And Peter is getting ready to, y'all listen, get your tablet and your pencil and paper out or text what he's getting ready to tell you. So go into details for someone else listening. They might want to submit some stuff to you, but go ahead what you're just getting ready to say. You were talking about the show that you're doing now.
The movie is called The Importance of Being Earnest. Brock, the late, great Brock Peters, CCH Pounder, who's on NCIS New Orleans, Ren Brown, Oba Babatunde. It's a great cast. And the movie is available as of February 14th. And you just go online to actboom.com, actboom.com. And you can order the picture right from the internet. I'm also working on documentaries on the wonderful first woman sportscaster on television, Jane Kennedy. Mm-hmm. We're also doing Bob Beamon, the Olympic superstar athlete whose record has never been broken. He's had a fascinating life. He's here in Las Vegas. And we're doing the Henry Tillman, who was a boxer who beat Holyfield, and he beat Mike Tyson and won an Olympic gold medal.
And you're busy.
Yeah. And then I'm working on a book. It's an extraordinary book called Cracked by a young lady in Baltimore, Maryland, Brianna Clark. And we're working on a sequel because it's intended to be probably a 4 to 6 hour miniseries for Netflix or for HBO. But you can get the book on Amazon, Cracked by Brianna Clark. And it's a very fascinating study about drug addiction, families, and an extraordinary upper-class woman, a lawyer, who gets strung out and it changes her life. It's a terrific piece. So I've got a bunch of projects that we're working on. I'm doing, you'll love this, Jimmy Wingfield, and people don't know, the Kentucky Derby. It's called Money Riders, the first Kentucky Derby. 1875, 13 of the 14 jockeys were black.
Wow.
And we dominated horse racing from 1875 to 1900. Those 25 years, there were owners, trainers, jockeys.
Who would have known that?
And we're doing a whole series on that called The Money Riders. Wow. In fact, you can go and see a little preview. We shot a little sizzle, and it's called themoneyriders.com. themoneyriders.com. So take a look and
give you some feedback on it.
That's going to be quite an interesting piece.
So how long does it take to say from concept to on the screen or people sitting there watching it?
It just depends. We've been working on Money Riders for 3 years now. Mm-hmm. I've only been working on Cracked for about 6 months, although the book has been out. I discovered the book and got in touch with Ms. Clark. The Importance of Being Earnest, I actually shot the picture 25 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And it stayed off the shelves. It was never distributed until now.
Okay.
So
We're watching stuff from the 50s, 40s, from
listen,
they don't get stale.
Yeah, these documentaries, I hope we're going to try to shoot the documentaries this year.
Okay.
So they won't be available for at least a year. It'll take a year to get them written, shot, edited, and then you have to put them in film festivals and arrange a distribution pattern for the projects. It's a long, involved – what goes on behind the scenes before you turn on your – click on your remote and see a show.
Yeah.
It looks like, oh, wow, that's great. But what goes into it as a producer, it's a long, involved, thankless process, and it's difficult, and they call it showbiz, and it's a glamour business, but quite honestly, the only glamour is when you finally get to show the picture.
In the red carpet events, right?
Yeah, and you hope people applaud it, or they throw tomatoes at the screen. So
be involved somehow. So back during the era that you were most active, and then now with the reality TV shows and all this other, what's your impression of that? Of saying Columbo and Quincy, those kind of movies.
Well, those were staff jobs. I mean, I worked for NBC. I worked for Columbia Pictures. I had a wonderful time working on a picture with a mentor that I had, Freddie Fields, who's one of the great, great producers, God rest his soul. And we did a picture in 1992.
Yourself, right?
Well, the picture took place. It was a Civil War picture called Glory. So I worked
on the distribution
and marketing of Glory, which was a wonderful experience because it was a terrific picture.
Yeah,
it
did.
So, you know, it just certain projects you remember and you love and other things. Now I run my own company. It's my own stuff.
Right.
And I have great passion. I want to do projects that change people's lives.
Yeah.
Or that have positive impact on people. Hence the Jane Kennedy, Bob Beeman, hence the Tillman story, hence Cracked. I mean, these are all projects that should influence behavior and be important as properties. And also most of my projects, the Money Riders, for example, involved African-American people. So retelling great historical stories that nobody really knows about on that level.
It's a PR opportunity.
I love that. It's a PR opportunity. It's also informative for young kids. Yeah. And I think that the key is develop a marketable skill in an area that you like, whether it's sales or whether it's cross-country truck driving. There's a lot of stuff. But you got to think about it and pursue something you like.
So, once again, plug some of the things that you're doing and how people can
The importance of being earnest. Please, you love that movie. It's a G film family movie. Go to actboom.com, actboom.com. Travis Smith and Jeff Beard run that company. It's a wonderful internet TV company.
All right, thank you for coming in. You guys, we're going to be back again next week for The Professional Next Door. See you then. Thanks to our guest, and thanks to you for listening. Knowledge, wisdom, experience. It's harvest time. This is your host, Jerry R. Smith, for The Professional Next Door. See you next week.